Hey everybody, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com. Welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. Once again, I've been a little inconsistent with these things, but wanted to get caught up on a few of the blog posts and stuff that I've made since I did my last one. Basically, last time I think I left off with a question that had been posed to me about yoga and mountain biking. And like I said, I was able to make a pretty good post on that, and actually led to another good question. So it's kind of a two-part post. But first off, just in case you didn't get to read my original post, I do want to say that I'm, you know, generally a fan of yoga, and I definitely think that it has some advantages. You know, encourage people to use it to gain some extra mobility and body awareness. But the thing is that just like any other training method, it has advantages and disadvantages. So it's not really a matter of, you know, is yoga good or is yoga bad? It's just a matter of understanding what those advantages and disadvantages are and how to best apply them. And I think a lot of confusion comes from yoga practitioners and yoga fanatics who really don't understand basic training principles and terms. And you know what I mean by that is, in the world of strength and conditioning, certain words have certain meanings. You know, for example, we're all mountain bikers, so if all of a sudden somebody started referring to a three-wheel trike as a bicycle, and you know, it would cause some confusion. You know, like there's definitely a difference between a three-wheel trike and a bike, and using those two terms interchangeably isn't necessarily the best way to have a conversation about, you know, what somebody's riding or things like that. So, but I gave a couple examples in the world of strength and conditioning on the blog post, and, you know, particularly things like power. You know, there's a, you know, power yoga is a term that's used, but it's actually an oxymoron. You know, power refers specifically to quick development of tension in a muscle, and it's best trained through fast movements like Olympic lifts and plyometrics and things like that. And seeing as how all yoga is done in a relatively slow and controlled manner, there's no way that it can develop power according to the true definition of the word. So again, just because something is hard doesn't mean that it's developing power. Another thing is strength. Strength again has a very specific meaning. You know, there's a difference between strength and strength endurance. And so, you know, something like doing a 3-rep max deadlift requires strength. Doing a 15-rep deadlift, that requires strength endurance. And the same thing applies to yoga. You know, when you first start getting into yoga, and if there's a pose or something that's impossible for you to hold for more than, you know, I'd say like 10 to 15 seconds, well, that's requiring strength. But as you get stronger and you're able to hold the pose for longer, you're not getting stronger at that point. What you're doing is starting to build more strength endurance. And so that's the, you know, kind of the take-home message is that, you know, these terms get thrown around pretty loosely. And it's not just yoga that does it. There's a lot of, different people in the fitness industry, and, you know, things like Pilates do this as well, you know, throw these terms around and really misusing them and causing confusion among people that don't really understand the terms extremely well. And so, you know, another thing to keep in mind is that mobility and strength are not necessarily the same thing. You know, the two can definitely be interrelated, but just because you've increased your mobility does not mean that you've necessarily made yourself stronger. And so, you know, this is a discussion that I actually had with a buddy of mine, and he just, you know, couldn't seem to quite wrap his mind around how somebody that can wrap themselves up into the most awkward position possible is not stronger than the person that can do a double bodyweight deadlift. And again, it's just, you know, having to understand the difference between mobility and strength, you know, what strength really means and things like that. And so, you know, another problem that you run into is that yoga definitely does a good job of teaching you how to control your own body weight and developing body awareness, but it doesn't teach you necessarily how to control and handle an external object. There's there are specific principles of training that are used to, you know, dictate what kind of results you're going to get. And one of the most important ones is the SAID principle, S-A-I-D. and that stands for Specific Adaptation to Imposed Demands. And basically, if you want to get better at handling your body weight, do body weight training. If you want to get better at handling external objects like your mountain bike or, you know, picking up a child or, you know, carrying a bag of groceries or something like that, you have to practice handling an external object. You cannot simply do body weight training and expect for that to have a very efficient transfer to things like, you know, handling an external object. So, you know, again, why is this important? Because, you know, the trick to creating any good training program is understanding the pluses and minuses of a given method so you know how to better apply it. You know, one of my favorite guys in the strength and conditioning field is Mike Boyle. And he's got, you know, a great analogy. You know, a chainsaw is a great tool, but it's probably not the best tool for hanging drywall. You know, so if you're looking to chop something down, then a chainsaw is the best thing possible, or one of the best things possible. But if you're looking to hang drywall, you're not going to do it very efficiently with a chainsaw. You need a hammer. So again, it's understanding what the different tools are and what they give to you and stuff like that. So, you know, a quick rundown, the pluses that yoga offers us. It teaches good body awareness, which is extremely important. It can develop mobility in key areas like the hips and upper back. It does develop core strength in those with poor core strength. And it is a low-impact exercise. You know, there are people that feel like they have to do something every day. And, you know, this kind of speaks more to the to their personal psychology than any sort of real truth. You know, you don't have to exercise every day in order to be fit. But some people feel if they're not doing something every day, then their fitness levels are dropping. And so, you know, in that case, something like yoga is a good option because it is a good low-impact exercise for people that want to do something every day, and it doesn't put that much of a pounding on the body. So, you know, to me, that's a better option than going and lifting heavy every day or you know, trying to get out for a ride or run every day and things like that. So, you know, but again, what are some of the minuses that yoga has and that we need to keep in mind? You know, it will stop offering a true strength challenge after the initial adaptation to it. Again, it will develop core strength initially, but eventually it stops being a true strength challenge. It stops developing true core strength, and you have to come up with exercises and methods that continue to challenge the core in a true strength challenging way. And again, you know, the said principle, it doesn't teach you how to effectively apply your strength in real life movements or situations like having to bend down to pick up a heavy box or a child. You know, a deadlift teaches you how to apply strength in a very real-life movement. You know, I mean, you know, again, I kind of, you know, say this jokingly when I'm talking to people about yoga, but I've never seen somebody do a chaturanga in real life. Like, that's not how you move in real life. So even though it's a good yoga movement, it doesn't necessarily teach you how to apply that strength and stuff that you're developing in a real life situation. So again, like I said, this isn't an either or type of argument. It's just understanding what yoga can do for you. You know, I wrapped up the post by, you know, with the example that, you know, a yoga fanatic that can get themselves into any position, but they're so weak that they couldn't fight their way out of a wet paper bag, they're no better than the meathead who can squat 600 pounds but can't wipe his own butt because he's so immobile. You know, you want to find balance between those two extremes. And we get in trouble when we try to, you know, justify why being too far to one end of the spectrum is all right. Now, there was another minus that I mentioned that actually led to another blog post, and that was that yoga can develop hypermobility, too much mobility, in some bad areas like the low back and the shoulders. And this is probably my biggest problem with yoga, is that it treats the body as if all joints are created to be mobile. And that's not necessarily the case. And on my blog, you know, Yoga for Mountain Biking Part 2 post, I addressed this question, because when I said that out of some people, you know, this is the first time they'd ever heard of that. That, like, oh wow, you don't want every joint in the body to be as mobile as possible. And so, again, going back to Mike Boyle, he was probably one of the first guys to bring this to my attention, and he had a great article at tnation.com called "The Joint by Joint Approach to Training." I guarantee, if you go to Google, I've got a link to it, or you can go to Google and just do a search for "Joint by Joint Approach to Training." You know, by this point, several years down the road, it's an extremely popular concept in strength and conditioning. And so, but anyways, the idea is that Our body is designed to be a series of stable and mobile joints stacked on top of each other. So in a nutshell, you want to have stable and strong feet with mobile ankles. You want stable knees with mobile hips. You want a stable lumbar spine with a mobile thoracic spine or upper back, and you want stable shoulders. And again, they've even broken this concept down to even more minutia, more detail as far as the joint by joint approach. But you know, the idea again, like joints like the knees, the low back, and the shoulders are easily injured if they move too much and they have too much mobility. So, you know, some areas, again, if they're too weak or they're not mobile enough, such as the feet, you know, if they're too weak, or the hips aren't mobile enough, then it's going to cause problems in other areas. And so, you know, a lot of times low back pain, for example, is not a matter of the low back being too weak from a movement standpoint or not mobile enough, it being too tight. What's happening is that the hips are not mobile enough, and it's causing too much movement in that lower back. So the lower back's not stable enough, and that's causing the pain. And so you want your core to basically be able to stabilize the lower back and resist movement, not help create movement. And this is why some people can safely deadlift hundreds and hundreds of pounds, and other people can throw out their back picking up a 50-pound bag of dog food. You know, the first group has a stable lower back and strong hips, and that second group has a hypermobile lower back that bends too much and tries to help out their tight and weak hips, and that tweaks their lower back out under relatively low load. So, you know, same thing with the shoulders. They're very mobile joints, but they have a very small position where they are stable and safe. And so if you develop too much mobility in the shoulder joint and you're not able to stabilize them properly, you're going to start developing shoulder problems. In fact, a lot of shoulder problems, like rotator cuff problems and things like that, are not necessarily from a lack of strength in the shoulders, but from an inability to stabilize the shoulder blades and keep the shoulders in a strong, stable position while moving. So, you know, again, that's one of the main problems that I see with yoga, is that, you know, even though it was developed a long time ago and there's a lot of wisdom in it, it does have some flaws in its methodology, especially the way that we understand how the human body is meant to move based on a 21st century understanding of training. So, again, just understanding that not all joints are created equal. And, you know, my advice is, if you really want to use yoga, that you, don't be cheap. You know, find a good yoga instructor. Like, I'm sorry, but I can pretty much guarantee you that the free yoga class that they're offering at your local gym is not attracting the most high-quality instructor in the world. And so if you're going to attend a yoga class because it's free and included with your gym membership, then you need to be prepared to do a little more research on your own and develop a little bit better understanding of some of these movement habits and things that I'm talking about. Because if you get somebody that doesn't understand the difference between coaching a movement and coaching a yoga pose, you can get in trouble. And so, you know, I think the example I used in my blog post was the down dog position in yoga. You know, that's a great position if you're not securing the position with your upper traps and your neck, and instead you're letting your shoulder blades drop down and back, and you're securing the position with your with your upper back, and that you're creating the mobility from your hips and not rounding too much from your lower back. So, you know, you can have somebody that is in quote unquote down dog position, but they're creating the movement in the wrong way. And so they're actually, you know, realistically probably creating more harm than good in the long run. So, you know, that's pretty much, you know, sums it up. You know, just understanding what the pluses and minuses are, understanding how the human body is supposed to move. Definitely encourage you to check out that article, The Joint by Joint Approach to Training, as it'll definitely help clear a lot of this stuff up. So, you know, that's pretty much it on the yoga front there. You know, the next blog post that I'd gotten into, and again, this is, from August 7th, so I'm definitely a few weeks behind here. But anyways, I made a post on you get what you put into it. And, you know, every once in a while, it just kind of amazes me how, you know, people start to, you know, not complain, but just kind of start mentioning that they're not really seeing the results that they were when they first started training. You know, the first few weeks of training, they really start to notice results. They're getting stronger. You know, they feel like every time they come into the gym, they're making progress. And, you know, it starts to be replaced by sort of complacency as they just kind of start going through the motions. And, you know, I had a group that I was working with that kind of started falling into this trap, and I, you know, started questioning them on a few things. You know, I look over their training logs, and I see that they'd stopped being diligent about filling them in and really trying to, you know, make a point of moving more weight each week or, you know, trying to get a couple extra reps. You know, if you're not progressing, if you're not improving in some way from week to week, then, you know, if you're not getting stronger, then, you know, you're probably not going to see good results. You know, I'd ask if they've been doing the extra cardio that they'd been assigned, and they hadn't. You know, they'd stopped turning in their food logs. And so, you know, I just had to remind them that you know, when you start to slack off on these little things, you're not going to see the results that you think that you deserve. And so, you know, you need to really, you know, take this to heart. You know, you have to remember that you only get out of a program what you put into it. No one can do it for you. And sometimes you got to buckle down and do things that you might not want to do. You know, you can't simply repeat the same weights and reps each workout for 4 weeks and expect for you to come out of that 4 week phase, you know, fitter and better. So, you know, don't be like the drones at the gym who just go in and they do the same workout every time. And then they complain that, oh, exercise just doesn't work for me, you know. I got a term that I use. It's called scare the normals. You know, I love going into a commercial gym and have people trip out on, you know, lifts like the Turkish get-up. You know, I love when people ask me, why do I work out so hard? You know, aren't I afraid that I'm going to get hurt? You know, to most people, anything that looks awkward or tough should be avoided and not embraced, you know, and that's just the wrong way to go about it. You need to embrace those things. You need to train with intensity. You need to challenge yourself each time you go into the gym. And if you're not doing that, then you just need to understand that you're not going to see the results for it. So, you know, just kind of a little reminder that you do get what you put into it. And it's not just training. That's anything in life there. So, you know, the next thing that I posted was upper body cardio option for mountain biking, and it's a video that I shot of one of my riders, Graham Pitts. He stopped by my facility after the U.S. Nationals, and it basically shows him using the ropes. And this is something that was popularized by Anthony DeLuzia, I think is his name, with theartofstrength.com, a big kettlebell guy. But it's basically using you know, pretty long section of thick rope in order to create an upper body cardio option. So it's a little difficult to explain on a podcast, so I definitely encourage you to either go to my website and, you know, do a search there for the upper body cardio option if you haven't seen it yet, or, you know, you can go online and find some other websites that show, I think they call them ropes gone wild is the popular term that they're using for them and stuff like that. So, but anyways, it, you know, it's not the cheapest thing for you to add to your gym, but it's definitely a great option. I mean, we love those things. We use the crap out of my facility, and I think they've just been awesome. I wouldn't, you know, definitely worth the investment. So, anyways, definitely encourage you to check that out there. The next post that I made was titled "Don't Just Control a Fall," and again, you know, it's funny how I get reoccurring themes throughout my day when I train people, and I just had noticed that I had to explain to several people the importance of trying to pull yourself down into an exercise instead of just controlling a fall. You know, most people seem to simply unhinge their joints and kind of free fall for a second and then catch themselves towards the bottom when lowering down into a rep. And, you know, in fact, there was one client that had a distinct popping sound coming out of her left knee when she did some split squats, and it was the same knee that had been giving her a lot of problems lately. And, you know, again, after I watched her for a second, I saw that she was simply unhinging and falling rather than really staying strong and tight and pulling herself down. So as soon as I told her, keep your core brace super tight and then actively pull yourself down instead of just falling, all of a sudden her control and her balance were vastly improved and the pop in her knee disappeared. So, you know, again, you just need to, you know, if you're strong, and this is kind of goes back to, you know, some of the words of wisdom from the Book of Five Rings and Musashi, you know, he says, if you're a warrior, you're a warrior all the time. If you're strong, you're strong all the time. You're strong from the second that your hand touches the weight or you start an exercise until the time that you stop. You're not relaxing and falling down into a movement because that's the easy thing to do. You're staying strong and tight and really pulling yourself down into a movement and then, you know, being strong again on the way back up. And you'll be amazed at what a huge difference that is going to make on your balance, on your control, and on your strength levels. You know, again, it seems like, wow, it's going to be harder. You know, it's going to take more energy to pull myself down than it will to fall. But I guarantee you that it takes way more energy to catch yourself at the bottom of a fall than it does to pull yourself down from the top to bottom. So, again, you know, your body has a tendency to try to find ways to relax, and that is at the expense of high-quality movement. So you need to be aware of that and make sure that you aren't, you know, falling victim to that, and it'll definitely help you out in a lot of different areas with your training there. And so, again, don't just control a fall. Stay strong, pull yourself down into a rep. It'll really help in a lot of different areas there. So, the next video that I had posted was on an assisted chin-up, and this is a request I had gotten a few weeks before I made this video. And basically, you know, I get people who aren't strong enough to do a chin-up, and especially a lot of ladies out there, who are curious, you know, what do I recommend if they're not able to do a chin-up? And so this video goes over how to use strength bands. They're basically, you know, huge, giant rubber bands in order to do an assisted chin-up. And I recommend using this over, like, having somebody help you or, you know, trying to jump up and things like that. I mean, if that's all that you can do, then that's better than nothing. But the bands are going to be more consistent in how much they're helping you, whereas if you've got a partner who's kind of holding your feet, you know, they may be pushing up a little bit more on a couple reps than they are on other reps. Or, you know, if you're doing like a, you know, a cheating pull-up, you know, a kipping pull-up, you know, one of those pull-ups that's been really popularized by CrossFit, and that's all that you do, you're never going to get the strength that you need to do a real chin-up or pull-up. And so that's why these strength bands are such a great option. So again, you know, it's a little bit of an investment, but, you know, especially for those of you that are really taking your training seriously and want to, you know, take it as far as you can, it's definitely worth it if you're not able to perform a full chin-up on your own. You know, next thing I got and posted was a video, video from a session up at the ranch. Just me and a couple buddies one Sunday afternoon. I'd gotten a new flip video camera. You know, some of you may have noticed that my videos are, you know, kind of got the wide screen and a little bit better video quality. I went and invested in one of those high-def flip video cameras, and so we were playing around with it up at the ranch and got some good footage of it there. So, you know, just one of the local ride spots that I hit up. And, you know, this is one of the testing grounds for the MTB strength training system. So, you know, you can see for yourself that I walk the walk, man. I ride myself. I'm not, you know, one of these armchair strength coaches that, you know, writes more than I actually get out and participate in my sport. So, some good stuff there. Next thing I got and posted was a blog post titled A 21st Century View on Training. And this is actually a summary that I had done at a talk. I'd done a talk at my chiropractor's office. And it's actually kind of funny. I mean, I've done a couple talks there, and for some reason this one, man, I had a lot of people attend this one, probably like two or three times as many as I've had attend any other seminar I've done. But the basic idea, and again, if you're familiar with my stuff, then this is probably not new to you, but, you know, there's a paradigm shift going on in the world of training. You know, and the analogy that I use is we used to think that the earth was flat, and everything was based on that assumption. And once we learned that it was round, that changed everything. It induced a paradigm shift in how we thought of the world and what was possible with navigation and stuff like that. So, you know, it doesn't mean that everyone was stupid before we found that out. It was just that they were making the best judgment on the info they had at hand. But once that info changed, your judgment needed to change as well. So same thing with training. You know, we didn't really understand the human body and how it moved as well as we do now, and how that movement impacts performance and injury potential. So we primarily looked at metabolic, you know, or training from a metabolic perspective. You know, we knew that if you did X number of reps for Y number of sets, you would, you know, get Z results. Or, you know, from a cardio training standpoint, we knew that if you rode for X number of minutes at, you know, Y heart rate, you'd get Z results. And so that's what we knew, and so that's how we programmed. But now that we understand that while the metabolic side is important, how you create that movement during your training program carries a significant effect on the results that you're going to get. You know, do too many reps in the wrong way and your knees and lower back are going to start going out. Bad movement also results in energy leaks, which means that you lose some of the force that you're trying to generate and just, you know, inefficient application of it. So, you know, again, movement must come first and then the metabolic side of things comes into it. So, you know, this goes back to Gray Cook, you know, functionalmovement.com and his functional movement screen and his optimum performance pyramid. You know, you have to establish quality of movement first, and then you train that good movement. And if you're just, you know, training without paying any attention to the quality of that movement, you very well could just be piling fitness on top of dysfunction, which is going to result in injuries and inefficient results down the road. So, you know, that's, you know, the kind of the take-home concept there, and kind of one of the core tenets of the MTB strength training system. One of the things that really separates it from a lot of the other programs out there is that emphasis on the quality of movement and how that movement is going to impact your overall program. You know, not all exercise programs are created equal. You know, if you're following a program that doesn't take the quality of movement into account, you're simply not following a 21st century training program. You know, you're still walking around with maps that tell you that the earth is flat. And, you know, that's not the best way to do it. Correct bad movement and train good movement. You know, it's a pretty simple but pretty profound concept, and it's going to help you get better results and last a lot longer in the long run. So, you know, that was, again, you know, pretty important post there. The next thing I got and posted was something I had taken a pretty good spill up at Keystone. I made a post on, you know, it's the ones you don't see coming, and, you know, just kind of lamenting the fact that, you know, when you know that you're in trouble on the trail and you're starting to go down, you know, you can usually do some things to minimize the impact. But, you know, in my case, I was riding on a log and took my eyes off the log for a second, looked up at the berm that the log fed you into, and, man, my front wheel dropped off that log, and, I mean, I did not see it coming. I had no clue what was going on. Next thing I know, the bottom of my world just drops out, and, bam, I hit the ground hard, slammed my knee into the log on the way down. God, it was a freaking good wreck, one I haven't had in a while. I'm good about once a year to take myself out for about a week in a wreck. So, you know, but that's what happens, you know, when you ride hard and you play hard, you got to pay the piper every once in a while. But it's pretty funny. My little girl had told me one time when I came home after a wreck, she came out in the garage and she goes, "High five, Daddy. Good job for riding hard." Which I thought was pretty profound words coming from a four-year-old. So kind of kept that in mind as I was trying to hobble it off. I do think it's funny how when we go down hard, we think that if we jump up real fast and try to walk it off, that it's somehow going to minimize the injury. But not always the case there, but it was kind of funny there. Anyways, so moving on, the next post that I had done, and this was, you know, not too long ago here, was, are the new ergo grips really bad for your wrists? And, you know, I think Ergon grips is the brand name, and I know, like, you know, Specialized is jumping on with their version of these things, but they're basically those grips that have the little wings on them. I've been seeing these things pop up everywhere, and, you know, I couldn't really understand why. And after talking with some people, I guess they're supposed to help with hand fatigue and forearm tendonitis. You know, but to be honest with you, you know, while I certainly think there's a place for him somewhere, again, going back to, you know, one of my early influences, Ian King, you know, you don't use the words always and never because it just shows a lack of critical thinking skills. You know, I'm sure that there's a place for him, but I think that they may be getting overused. I think there's a lot of riders. It's kind of like wearing a weight belt for deadlifts, you know, instead of taking the time to strengthen the core and correct your lifting mechanics. If you just slap a weight belt on so that you can lift more weight in the deadlift, you may actually be doing more harm than good in the long run. And it seems to me that there's a weakness in the hands, in the wrists, and probably just bad cockpit setup that's causing a lot of this pain. You know, and so if you just take the time to set your cockpit up correctly, you do some soft tissue work, basically do some massage, do some stretching in the forearms, you know, do some grip strengthening work and things like that, that they're probably going to help out more than these new ergo grips are going to help you out. You know, and again, I know I probably mentioned Mike Boyle 3 or 4 times already in this podcast, but, you know, he's got another great analogy with this. You know, it's like the smoke detector in a house is going off, and the solution is to pull the batteries out so it'll shut up. You know, like, that's not the best way to do it. Figure out, why is the smoke detector going off? Why is the pain there? It has a real cause. You know, it may be bad cockpit setup. It might be tight muscles and tendons. It may be poor wrist and finger strength, or a combination of all those things. But simply switching your grips to these new ergo grips to silence the pain is only going to delay the inevitable and make it worse, because you will end up hurting again, and the pain's going to be worse, and it's going to be even harder for you to address it. So, again, you know, I could be wrong, but I do think that there's something to that that you want to, you know, keep in mind. Like, you know, analyze some of these things, and if you find that, you know, indeed there are some issues with your cockpit setup or your, you know, wrist, you know, for hand strength and stuff like that, you know, address the real problem. Don't just try to slap a Band-Aid on it and go on. And so, anyways, the next post that I'd gotten done was titled "Where's Your Focus?" And this is another concept that I've been, you know, realizing is something that people need to keep in mind and think about more. Is there's a difference between focus and paying attention to. And, you know, especially on, you know, with key exercises. And focus is where you want to have most of your conscious thought. And paying attention to are those areas that you want to be thinking about, but you kind of want to have them in the peripheral of your brain. And if you switch those things, you're going to get in trouble. You know, this goes on the trail, you know, applies to the trail as well. You know, if you're focusing on your front tire and only kind of paying attention to the rest of the trail, you're going to end up crashing. You know, you want to be paying attention to what's coming up in front of you, and I mean, focusing on, you know, the trail in front of you, and just kind of paying attention to, you know, the stuff that's coming up in directly in front of your wheel. And same thing with the exercise. Probably one of the best examples is the single leg deadlift. You know, this is an exercise that I introduced in my dumbbell combos program. And I probably had more riders email me about that than any other exercise. You know, I actually had just gotten an email when I wrote this from a guy who said he can deadlift, you know, 225 pounds, but he can hardly do a single leg deadlift with just his body weight. And, you know, there's a lot of different, you know, factors for that. But, you know, one of the main things is that I've seen in my facility with people that do this is their focus is on, like, the ground. You know, they're paying too much attention to how close they're able to get to the ground, and they're not really focusing on keeping their core tight and driving their hips down and back. And as soon as you switch that, as soon as your whole world becomes core tight, drive my hips down and back, then it helps you feel way more balanced, and your form on the lift and your strength on the lift goes way up. And so, you know, you have to pay attention to things like, you know, you want to be paying attention to keeping your toes lightly off the ground and keeping a proud chest and stuff like that, but you have to really focus just, you know, most of your conscious attention going to keeping that core braced and driving those hips back and down. You know, how close you get to the ground I've never talked about that with the single leg deadlift. And so you want to, you know, I don't care how close you come down. I don't care if your range of motion is 6 inches. you know, if you're not creating the movement like I've described, you know, in my demos and stuff for the single leg deadlift, then it doesn't really matter. So, you know, again, all exercises have those focus versus paying attention to points. And so you got to master your mind while training, letting it wander and either having no thought, which again, you know, I can't even believe how many times I've told somebody how to do an exercise. And then they try it, and they're struggling with it, and I ask them, well, what were you thinking about? And they're like, I don't know. Well, it's like you have to be thinking of something. You have to master your mind while training. You know, letting your brain think about whatever it wants, or worse yet, not think about anything at all, is only going to lead to superficial results. So, you know, and that's also going to help you on the trail. You know, it takes a lot of focus to keep your eyes and your focus. You know, it takes a lot of concentration to keep your eyes and focus where you need it on the trail, and not let that, you know, big rock or ledge, you know, command your focus. You know, like they say, don't look where you don't want to ride. So, you know, practicing mastering your mind in the gym is also going to help you on the trail quite a bit. And, you know, so that's pretty much it for today. I see the podcast is starting to get a little long here. We're going on, you know, a little over half an hour. So got a few more that I want to get to, but I'm going to save that for next week to kind of get caught up on the rest of my, you know, kind of quick summary on some of these blog posts and adding a few more things into it there. So, you know, anyways, you know, as always, if, you know, anybody has any questions or comments about any of these things, you know, go visit my blog at bikejames.com, and I'll be more than happy to, you know, answer any questions that you may have on these things. Appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to this and read my blog, and, you know, I'm really stoked to help you enjoy the trail more. It's pretty much why I do this. Just want to help you have more fun, and hopefully, you know, these podcasts and my blog are giving you some information to do that. So once again, this has been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and bikejames.com, and I will talk to you guys next week.